ready for Rosalind. You are the pain. Oh, 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 the way. Oh, oh, the way. The fight, the run, the run. The life, the love, we're taking it all the way.
Welcome to the Sleeper Wire Show. We have a very special guest on the show today, Ryan McDowell, writer and co-owner of Dynasty League Football. Ryan, how you doing, man?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on again. It's good to be on here and talk some football.
Been a couple months. Yeah, best friend of the show now.
That's right. Absolutely.
Also on the show, Steve Speck. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Doing well, and I'm glad to be back on here talking football with Ryan. I was on the last one with you, and it's a good time, and just thanks for coming back on, man. Always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have a great show for you guys today. We're going to be talking about the Scott Fish Bowl and then discussing position battles. And really, we're just going to be talking about running back position battles. But let's go ahead and kick it off with some Scott Fish Bowl discussion. So, Ryan, these are really going to be directed to you for the most part. This is the 10th year of the Scott Fish Bowl, which is a massive league with fantasy analysts and fans. Can you elaborate on what the Scott Fish Bowl is for those who haven't heard of it?
Yeah, sure. So our friend, Scott Fish, started a league. Basically, you could call it a pro-am league, but a league for both analysts and fans or you know, just your average fantasy player out there. He started that actually 11 years ago as part of his site that he ran at that time, FF Oasis. And, you know, like most things, started out small. And I think he actually even took 1 year off there when his child was born, his son was born. But so this will be the 10th year. And of course, it's grown to be a huge tournament. I would say probably the biggest fantasy football tournament or biggest fantasy football league there. And because of the work Scott does with Fantasy Cares and Toys for Tots, I would say it's also the most important. And I just love that throughout the offseason, but especially that first week in July when drafts are starting, it seems like everybody in the community is talking about the Scott Fish Bowl. I remember even last year it was trending on Twitter. So it's, you know, it's not just our community, but it's such a big deal that people are talking about this. And Scott, through that, has raised thousands and thousands of dollars. In fact, I think the number was around $50,000 just last year.
That's huge.
That mostly went for Toys for Tots and really helped out a ton of families.
So how did you get involved with the Scott Fish Bowl?
Yeah, so Scott and I just became friends over the years, mostly through our shared passion for commissioning and running leagues. We would bounce ideas off each other, and as SFB grew, I basically, you know, I recognize how much work that is, and Scott's done, of course, you know, 99% of the work over the years, and with a league that has 1,200 people. Every little bit of help that you can get really makes a difference. So I was glad to help Scott out in any way I could and started doing that 2 or 3 years ago, I guess, and just helping him fill the leagues, set those leagues up on my fantasy league, send the invites, really whatever I can do. I'm kind of try to be his flunky around this time of year just because it is such a big project to take on.
Well, you do a lot of work during the slow drafts as well, because that's how it's been the last few years. I'm assuming that's how it'll be this year as well. 8-hour clock. But when you have people who don't even show up for the first round, you're one of the people to contact about that.
Yeah, again, I try to help Scott in any way I can. And I know that's the actual day that the drafts begin. That's always something he's watching is let's just get through the first round. Let's make sure everybody shows up. The days leading up to the draft, making sure everybody has gotten their invite, making sure everybody has logged into the site. Even after you do that, you still have a few people who simply miss it for whatever reason and have to be replaced. So we're always kind of scrambling on draft day to make sure every single league is full and drafting, and that all 1,200 people are showing up. So
yeah,
that's a lot. Sometimes we like to talk strategy or what our draft plan is, and I'm going to blame my poor finishes on not really getting focused on my own draft, but having to help out and be a commish. But yeah, Scott's done well, it seems like, in the past few years, so that hasn't hurt him any.
So it's been super flex leagues for the last 2 years, or maybe even longer. I can't remember what it was a few years ago. But last year it was a tight end premium. So it was PPR. You got a point for – or half PPR, right? Half point for the catch and then a point for the first down.
Yeah, I love that Scott is always trying to master the scoring system, make it very balanced, yep. and really bring changes.
Yeah.
To not only that league, but to the community as a whole.
Well, tight ends for first down catches got 2.5 points last year, which is ridiculous. I had the 103. I took Kelsey at the 103. So Steve, do you remember who you took in the first round?
Unfortunately, David Johnson. At like 106 or 107, something like that.
I had set my auto draft to – or my pick to automatically be Travis Kelce because I wasn't going to be – I think I had something going on like teaching during that time. So I was like, I'll just set my pick to automatically go. That way people won't be waiting on me to teach. And I took Kelce over Saquon because of the auto pick. It went. I was 100% positive it was going to go McCaffrey-Saquon, and it went McCaffrey-Zeke. So I took Kelce over Saquon, which ended up working out because he missed a lot of the season anyway. But yeah, Kelce at the 103. What about you, Ryan? Who'd you take?
I think I went tight end as well. I believe I took George Kittle in the first. I had a later first round pick. I ended up making the first cut of the playoffs, but didn't go any further. So I don't know. It would be interesting to look back at the playoff teams, the final 10 or 20, however Scott sets it up, and really see what their team makeup was.
I was going to say I had the same outcome too, because I went David Johnson, I came around, I got Kittle. Then I had guys like Mark Andrews and Darren Waller and Chris Herndon and all that targeted later. So I ended up with Waller and Herndon, but we all know the story with Herndon there. But I mean, I ended up same thing. I mean, I won my division, but, you know, got the first round bye or whatever. And then I think Chris Towers actually throttled me. It was either him or somebody else, obviously.
So what I was going to say was, you know what? I completely forgot what I was going to say. So it doesn't really matter. Anyways, well, let's go ahead and move on. So last year, the theme for each one of the leagues was video games. So the leagues were divided into – there were divisions, and then each division, I think, had 8 leagues in it, was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, so it was video games last year. This year, it's toys. What's been your favorite theme for the Scott Fishbowl Leagues?
We're a Disney family, so the Disney theme was probably my favorite, and I think that's probably the year. I guess that was 2 or 3 years ago. That's around the time I really started helping Scott with the leagues a little bit more, and we were organizing like. Disney drafts to even determine who the divisions would be named after. So that was a lot of fun leading up to the actual draft and the actual league.
Did Disney own Star Wars and Marvel at that time?
I think they did. I believe they were both in that.
Man, they own everything.
They really do.
They own ESPN, which is crazy to think about. All right. Well, hey, Scott, any other questions for Ryan about Scott Fishbowl? Or Steve, not Scott.
Scott here.
No,
Scott
not about Scott Fish, but one thing, because this was something that we were talking about earlier before we dive into everything that you put out on Twitter today, Ryan, that was very intriguing.
Oh, yes.
That was your ADP and trade value not being the same thing.
Yes.
You know, I really read through that and looked through the whole thing. I was like, God, this is great. And I ended up, you know, I retweeted it and said, you know, this is good stuff, because people do, they do have the misperception of it. And, you know, your point is very valid, but I mean, it's your tweet. You put it out there. So, I mean, kind of elaborate for everybody out there on that.
Sure. So I've just been looking at some of our recent ADP that we have over at DLF. And I think a lot of times people will look at ADP and just assume that it's also a trade chart, that if you have the 25th player, you could trade him for the 24th player. And if you have much experience in dynasty leagues, or certainly trading in dynasty leagues, you know, that's just not really the way it is. But with that said, I do think it's useful to give us a gauge. So basically what I wanted to look at was comparing veteran players to the rookies that had been drafted in our startup ADP. And there's so many rookies that it became interesting this year. You look at, there were about 10 or 11 players drafted before the 101. We know Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the 112 in our May ADP. So, 11 guys ahead of him. Only one veteran drafted between he and Jonathan Taylor. That was Nick Chubb. So, you know, based on that, you could say roughly Nick Chubb is worth between the 101 and 102. And then I just continued that down the line. And like I said, it kind of gives you a rough estimate of maybe what rookie pick you could get for a certain veteran.
No, it was definitely really good. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that are marking that thing somehow. You know, they're going to be talking trades over the next couple of weeks and referencing back to that. Because, I mean, it really does. It gives you the temperature on where everything's at. We'll say, like, one of them, for example, that I saw there, you had Matt Breida, was a 212 plus or whatever, and I felt pretty good in one draft that I had a 211, and I really didn't like what was left on the board and ended up trading that straight up for Matt Breida. So it's just, it's apples and oranges. It really is.
Yeah. When you look at the list, there are a few that I think really stand out one way or the other. So the, let's see. I'm looking back at it now. The 111 was Melvin Gordon and Evan Ingram. Right. I do not think you could get a first rounder for Melvin Gordon right now in most situations. So you look at that and think that's a little bit off. He's probably worth less than that. That just tells you that the 11th rookie, whether it's Justin Jefferson or Michael Pittman, T. Higgins, whoever it is in that range for you, is looking like a value in startup drafts. A lot of times we talk about rookies are overdrafted or overvalued. I think in almost every case, they're undervalued, underdrafted, because they're almost locks to gain value in that next year.
All right.
I will say it works the other direction as well, because if you sent someone, hey, I'll send you the 105 for Lamar Jackson, they're going to laugh in your face.
Right. Yeah. He was on that 105 list.
Yep. He was.
Yeah. I don't know, actually. I mean, that's kind of team dependent. If you're looking at 105 and, if that's J.K. Dobbins, I'd rather have J.K. Dobbins than
team dependent format, stuff like that. I mean, that all factors into.
Yeah, certainly format. I mean, all of this data was based on one quarterback leagues. Obviously, if you're talking super flex, then
it's way different.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, you're selling your child for that and then some.
Right.
But no, this was super interesting to look at, and the way that you broke it down in all of these tweets, it was 23 tweets in one, something like that.
Probably. Yeah. I went pick by pick all the way to the end of the second round of rookie drafts.
Yeah. It made it really easy to read the format that you put it in. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I look at ADP so much, and rankings and our trade analyzer and things like that, that when something comes to mind that I think is interesting, I usually try to share it, because I assume other dynasty players might find some value in it as well.
For sure. So
you're still doing mock drafts right now, right? You usually do them pretty much through the off season.
Yeah, we do them every month. We do startup drafts every month of the year, actually, during the season and during the off season. We just started those yesterday. So we're already seeing some changes. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is actually falling, and we got a lot of feedback that him being the 112 last month was overvalued. It was crazy. It was rookie hype, rookie fever. And I get that. He's looking more like a mid-second rounder right now. And what's really interesting is Jonathan Taylor has overtaken him. So we're seeing Taylor and Clyde kind of switch spots, 1-1, 1-2, in startup drafts and rookie drafts, I'm sorry. And now we're seeing that show up in startup drafts as well. And then Miles Sanders is moving up. He jumped ahead of Josh Jacobs and all the rookies. He's a first rounder now.
Yeah, I think he's going to continue to climb as long as they don't sign a veteran.
And you're talking dynasty startups, right?
Yes, dynasty startups. Yep. One quarterback PPR.
Yeah, that's like the biggest thing. A lot of people had some scare there with Carlos Hyde and Devonta Freeman, and then all of a sudden, you know, Hyde goes to Seattle. Freeman saying he might sit out here, so there's still really nobody there. I mean, aside of Boston Scott, that's contending him. So I wouldn't be surprised if his ADP keeps climbing at least a little bit more. Yeah, because you generally put that out. I mean, you generally put out a tweet like at least once a month or twice a month or something like that.
About the ADP updates?
Yeah, the ADP.
Yeah, as it comes in, I try to share that. I'll probably do that. I might do that later today even because just as the data kind of formulates, I like to share that. First round is set. The second round is getting close as we go through these drafts. So, Miles Sanders is the big mover right now, jumping into that first round range.
All right, guys, well, let's go ahead and move into the second part of what we wanted to talk about today. And that was talking about position battles, and in particular, looking at position battles at the running back position. So as we go through, you'll see a lot of these are, incumbent starter versus rookie, but that's not necessarily the case. We're just looking at position battles in general. And the first one is the one that might be the easiest for us to answer. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Damian Williams. So, Ryan, I will kick this one to you first. Is there a clear winner here?
Yeah, I think there's a clear winner. And, all due respect, I'm not sure this is even going to be a battle. I just feel like Clyde Edwards-Helaire does everything that Damian Williams does, but better. And the Chiefs are, they've proven at least the past few years to be a very well-run team. They're finding values. They're not going to spend a first-round pick on a running back or really on any player and waste it. So I think we see Clyde Edwards-Helaire make an impact right from the start. I was looking at Damian Williams' numbers, and it's really shocking. You know, we remember him for really carrying that load and winning
in two games,
right? Winning some fantasy titles in 2018 when he took over for Kareem Hunt and had that late season run. He really did the same thing last year, had a big late season run after his injury. I looked at his numbers today. He scored 445 fantasy points in his career, 209 of those in the last month of the season. So the last month of each season of his career, almost half of his fantasy scoring comes in week 14 through 17. So, I think the Chiefs clearly wanted to kind of shore up that position, get someone a little more reliable, get someone a little younger. It's going to be Clyde from the start, in my opinion.
So basically trade for Damian Williams just before your deadline. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Stick him in your lineup in the playoffs, but not until then.
He's the bullpen guy.
Now, you do have all those Damian Williams truthers out there who are still high on those just few games, either from last year or the fact that he won them a fantasy championship in 2018, who are, still on the D-Will train. I will say we had Jake Seeley on the show 2 weeks ago, though, and he said in redraft, he's got Clyde as his 106.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of that Edwards-Helaire showing up in the first round, certainly in the second round of redraft leagues. Would not surprise me at all.
All right, so I think we are all on the same page there that it's basically CEH over Damian Williams. The Bills spent an earlier round pick on Zach Moss. They did lose Frank Gore, so you've got Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. Do you think that Singletary is ready to carry the load, or is there a reason that they brought Zach Moss in? Who do you think is going to have the starting job?
I mean, this screams committee to me. We've already heard the Bills GM talk glowingly about both of these guys. calling Zach Moss the perfect Frank Gore replacement, talking about Moss and his power as he can be that goal line option, while calling Singletary shifty. We talked about Singletary not as a lead back last year, but as a complement in a committee. And then they just didn't have anybody else. Gore was fine. Yeldon couldn't even get on the field. They just didn't have many options. So I think this is absolutely going to be a committee. And honestly, I think the addition of Zach Moss could hurt Josh Allen more than it hurts Devin Singletary. Josh Allen has led the league, led all quarterbacks in rushing touchdowns the past 2 years, even though a couple of years ago he had the injury and started slow. 8 touchdowns in 2018, 9 rushing touchdowns in 2019. With Zach Moss there, I think that number drops, and that's going to hurt Josh Allen's fantasy upside.
Steve, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a committee. I'm very high on Devin Singletary, and I really did enjoy Zach Moss through college, and I was high on him, and I really wanted to see where he was landing. It kind of made me sad, but it's definitely going to be a 1A, 1B. Like, to me, Zach Moss is Singletary, but with power. He's just as elusive as he is. He's a good pass catcher. He's good in pass pro. He can do it all. So he just brings that extra element. And I mean, I kind of see it. I don't see it be like a 50-50 split, but once you're inside the 20s, it's going to be Zach Moss all day long, unless they run different formations or whatever. I mean, there's opportunities where they could run them both on the field at the same time, especially if somebody like Cole Beasley goes down or something like that. So it's definitely going to be a unique situation. And to me, it's, if you have one, it's worth rostering both, because I think you're going to be able to get, at least flex play out of both of them. And then if one of them goes down, either one of them is an immediate RB2.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think they're both undervalued right now. I think the arrival of Moss has hurt both of their values. And Singletary, I don't want to take away from his rookie season. He had 2 games as an RB1, 5 games as an RB2. So this is not a guy who had just earth-shattering production. I think even with Moss on the field, we could see Singletary improve his numbers this year.
Well, he missed 4 games, right? 3 or 4 games, something like that. But,
well, and also being, you know, a young guy, he was a rookie last year, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, being a rookie, he wasn't even really getting a lot of the touches over Frank Gore early on in the season. So it's not super surprising that he didn't have a whole lot of high fantasy finishes. But Steve, you had said you don't see it being a 50-50. Who do you see as getting more of the work?
I think it favors Singletary. Okay. Just because he's obviously a year further into the system. Yep. You know, we're talking about these position battles. These guys aren't even really going to have a true training camp or anything like that. I mean, Devin Singletary, like a lot of rookies do, you know, he suffered a hamstring injury. Zach Moss has had minor durability concerns. So if he's not going to get a full camp and really training with these guys the way that they need to with the program, so on and so forth, it's hard to say how much we're really going to see out of him in the beginning of the year. But obviously, as the season goes on, I think it's going to ramp up for him. But I see kind of like a 60-40-ish, you know, give or take. But definitely Singletary is going to be the lead.
Let's move over to Washington. So we have 3 running backs in this backfield right now. Of course, we have Adrian Peterson and Darius Geis, who I feel like a lot of people kind of forget about, and Antonio Gibson. Now, someone had mentioned, Ryan, that you like Antonio Gibson.
I do like Antonio Gibson a lot. Really exciting player. Gibson himself, there was a lot of discussion. Would he be a receiver or a running back? And pre-draft reports basically had every team both liking him but considering him a running back. And, of course, that's how the Redskins drafted him or announced him when they selected him. Gibson said he wants to be an offensive weapon, and that's really, really what he is. That's what he was at Memphis. Over 85% of his snaps last year were from the slot. I don't think we'll see a number quite that high, but he's going to be all over the field. So in some way, I don't even I don't even consider him in this running back battle. They just want to get him the ball out of the backfield, out of the slot, lined up out wide, wherever. If guys can stay healthy, this is his backfield, and Peterson will kind of fade away. And it really just comes down to his injury concerns, a knee sprain, a meniscus tear, an ACL through 2 years in the league and so many missed games. Just hope for his sake that he can stay healthy.
Do you think we're going to have something like we had with Denard Robinson a bunch of years ago, where he gets the dual position, gets a wide receiver and running back designation?
I mean, there's a couple of guys that could see that this year, and he's one of them. I don't know, that was so rare for a long time, and then we saw Ty Montgomery switch positions a few years ago, and this year it's Gibson and Lynn Bowden as well, both kind of making that switch. So, I guess that's up to the host sites to see what they do, but I wouldn't be shocked.
Steve, who's the guy you'd most rather roster, Darius Geis or Gibson?
Honestly, Gibson. I really can't trust anybody in that backfield. I mean, to me, Bryce Love is the other potential lottery ticket. I mean, if you really look at what Geis has endured, what Ryan was just talking about, Bryce Love, he had an injury-riddled 2018 season that was capped off by an ACL tear, and then he missed his whole rookie season, obviously. He even had a little bit of a setback. You know, there's Adrian Peterson. Chris Thompson's gone. They brought in Peyton Barber and Josh Ferguson, I think, whatever. Those are guys. There's really, with injuries and talent and age, there's really not a whole lot there to compete with. I mean, Gibson, I think, is the ultimate backup at the running back position, but they are going to find ways to utilize that guy on the field. He is way too talented. He is way too athletic. He was a transfer, a JUCO transfer as a wide receiver, and he played running back and wide receiver in Memphis. And it's very hard to see what's going to be there now. If Geis does prove to be healthy, if Love is healthy, then you have Gibson. It's very possible you could see Adrian Peterson cut as well. So it's all very hard to say. That's just one of those things that normally in camp you would pay attention to, but we don't know what we're really looking at this summer, unfortunately.
You forgot about J.D. McKissick.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Don't they – the Redskins have the most running backs on their roster right now, don't they?
They kind of have to. I think
it's like 8 or 9 of them.
Sorry about that, everybody. Some technical difficulties. Chris, unfortunately, had to deal with some power issues, with the storm going on over there in Minneapolis. So it is Ryan and I continuing the show, and we are just going to keep rolling on with these position battles with running backs. And we're looking at Kerryon Johnson and DeAndre Swift in Detroit. Ryan, before I even get into my thoughts, I'm going to kick it to you. Where do you stand with this situation here?
I think a lot of people were surprised that the Lions spent such an early pick on a running back and a running back like Swift. But really, you could kind of see this coming. Kerryon Johnson just hasn't been healthy enough to produce for them. I mean, going into last season, this guy was a second rounder in startup dynasty drafts, which is just crazy to think about right now. Post-draft, after the addition of Swift, after yet another injury ended his season early, he's outside of the top 100 in our latest ADP. So it has definitely gone from one extreme to the other for Kerryon Johnson, but his injury list is just never ending. Two shoulder injuries in high school, an MCL injury, and a thumb injury. That's during his high school career. In college, rib injury, ankle, shoulder, a hamstring. And then in the NFL, in his two seasons with the Lions, he's had two knee injuries that have ended each of his seasons early. So just really disappointing. And, I mean, you hate to see any player deal with those constant injuries, but as fantasy players, as dynasty players, we have to factor that in. I was told that Kerryon Johnson didn't even want to be the lead back. He basically wants to be part of a committee. So he's going to get his wish, or I guess if he's lucky, he's going to get his wish. But DeAndre Swift is definitely the back to own there. With Kerryon Johnson's quickly fading value in ADP, I do like him as a buy low. I mean, he's 22 years old. even with those injuries, with the frustrating production, you don't just get 22-year-old running backs outside of the top 100 in startups. So if you're in that, you know, if you're in that 10th, 11th, 12th round range, sure, take a chance on him.
Yeah, I mean, Ronald Jones is probably the only running back you can get that late at that age in a dynasty. But, you know, it is really weird how they made that pick, because it's almost like a luxury pick that they're not in a position to even make. And, you know, just I hear it all the time here in Detroit. They constantly, you know, blame the lack of a running game with that offense and things of that sort. And it's kind of funny that Swift is here, because he grew up, you know, idolizing and modeling his game after Barry Sanders. And it is kind of funny that he's here. And I heard the same thing, you know, your point that you brought up about Johnson wanting to be in a committee. I mean, maybe he's succumbed to the fact that it's just what his best chance. It's what his body can handle, because he does have a laundry list. And the guy, he's actually a good running back. I mean, yeah. His rookie year, he averaged like 4.5 yards a carry. And what he did at Auburn in the SEC, I mean, I'm a fan of running backs that do well in the SEC. That's why I'm more of a believer than most people with Keyshawn Vaughn this year. Just because of what he did in the conference that he did it in. But yeah, it's just a shame, because Kerryon Johnson's one of those guys that, you know, really could have had a bright future. I mean, it's kind of funny. I look at his situation in Detroit and I go back to Javid Best, a guy that, you know, had some upside, but just, you know, the unfortunate injuries.
Yeah, the Lions just seem cursed. I don't know, curse of Barry Sanders or something.
It's a curse of something. It's been a long time. 57, man.
Yeah.
So the next backfield here is in Indianapolis, and the minute that they drafted Jonathan Taylor, I just thought, you know, rest in peace Marlon Mack's career in Indianapolis. I mean, there's only one thing that I really see that could really keep him involved, you know, especially once you get like a little bit later into the season, is the fact that Jonathan Taylor had ball security issues big time in college. So it's very hard to say what'll come of that. You know, you look at that offensive line, you put Phillip Rivers back there. It's probably the first time in his career he's not going to have to run around and cement feet looking for help. So, I mean, it's a very good situation. It's a very good team. And Jonathan Taylor is definitely one of the better backs this class. He's very talented. And to put him behind that offensive line is kind of scary. You know, I mean, where do you see him at, and where's he at in the ADP that you got going on right now?
Yeah, Taylor is just outside the first round, so dynasty players are already valuing him as an elite asset, as an elite running back, and I think they should, for a lot of the reasons that you said there, Steve. I mean, that offensive line, any of these running backs that landed in Indy, we would be chasing, and especially Jonathan Taylor, who most people consider to be the 101 rookie pick entering the NFL draft. Certainly no later than the 1.02, but I mean, I've never been a huge Marlon Mack fan. My concern has always been his limited ceiling.
Yep.
He's got 8 RB1 games in 3 years, which is fine. You know, it's okay. It's not terrible. You've gotten some good usage out of him, but we just don't see that ceiling with him at all. And with Jonathan Taylor, that's almost all you see. And then thinking about that backfield as a whole, I'm confident that Taylor's a better ball carrier, a better runner than Marlon Mack. And I think Nyheim Hines is a better pass catcher out of the backfield. So, I mean, that's bad news for Marlon Mack. If he's not going to be the lead runner and he's not going to be that third down change of pace option, he's going to run out of space really quickly.
Yeah. He's going to be depending on injuries at that point in time. I mean, Marlon Mack, they weren't like the worst or most terrible, but he never really had the strongest receiving skills. And Jonathan Taylor has greater receiving skills than he does, you know, and then there's Nyheim Hines. So, yeah, it's very unfortunate. Marlon Mack was like one of those guys that, you know, if you had a solid RB1, RB2 guy and you're sitting on the board and you got at least one stud wide receiver and you're like, hey, you know, I know I'll get at least like low end RB2 with RB1 upside with this guy, and you're starting 3 solid running backs. So that was always the Marlon Mack for me.
Yeah.
So next group we'll look at is speaking of Ronald Jones and Keyshawn Vaughn a second ago, that's what we're looking at there. And I know a lot of people are staying away from this backfield, but I kind of have my perspective on it, but I'm going to go ahead and kick this to you first. I mean, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I know you mentioned a little bit of love for Keyshawn Vaughn, and I get that. I mean, he certainly claimed that spot as RB6 in the rookie class, which normally wouldn't sound like such a good thing, but in a group this talented, it was going to be that fight for who was next after the big five running backs. And for a long time, we thought it might be Zach Moss, but with the landing spot in Tampa, it has become Keyshawn Vaughn. I just go back to Bruce Arians' history. He's had 6 years as a head coach in the NFL. In that time, he's had two top 18 running backs. And I mean, that top 18 might feel a little arbitrary there, but basically I'm looking at an RB1 and a half. So the top 12 running backs referred to as RB1s. And then let's go a little deeper because we're all starting more than one running back anyway. So going top 18, he's had two top 18 running backs in 6 years as a head coach, in 9 years as an offensive coordinator, on top of those 6 years, also two. So in that 15-year career, four top 18 running backs. And yeah, I mean, it's just not a lot to be excited about. Normally we like that. We like those Bruce Arians offenses, but it's really more about the passing game and the passing offense. So I'm kind of one of those who's just staying away. Although Ronald Jones is so cheap, like I talked about with Kerryon Johnson, why not take a chance? He also had three RB1 games last year. I talked about that with Marlon Mack. I think we just kind of brush him aside and say he's been terrible, but he was actually probably better last year than he gets credit for.
Yeah, he definitely had some moments. Like, my whole thing with Ronald Jones is the fact that he could be on the field first couple snaps of the game, you know, missing assignment and pass protection, which is not his strongest suit. And then he's off the field. And that's like a big thing with Bruce Arians. And he doesn't really have the strongest receiving skills either. And those are things that Vaughn brings to the table. That's like, for me, Vaughn, you're getting the sixth best running back. Yeah, I mean, you could say 6-7 or whatever. I mean, you can go back and forth between him and Zach Moss, but with Vaughn, I think it's just more, he's probably going to have more opportunities just because of the system. And he's going to carry more value in PPR in my mind. But yeah, he's the kind of guy he's going to be, I think, a solid RB3 option, a solid flex option, especially through bye weeks. And then he's just not going to be a bad guy to have in dynasty leagues. In my opinion, I mean, just simply because of the system alone and what he brings to the table. So looking over to Los Angeles with the Chargers. Now, Austin Eckler's not on here. The biggest topic of conversation, and I like talking about this one, is Justin Jackson and Joshua Kelly, because obviously Jackson, he's been around a couple of years. I believe he was a seventh rounder, right?
Yep.
And then Joshua Kelly, they spent a third rounder on. So this is kind of interesting here now, especially because of the type of runner that Josh Kelly is, just losing Melvin Gordon. You go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a committee here. I think we're getting a backfield committee, and I think Justin Jackson might be the odd man out.
I agree.
Because I think a lot of what he does well, Austin Eckler does just a little bit better, or in some cases a lot better. Whereas Kelly is more of the complement to Eckler's game. And I mean, for Jackson, he just needs to stay healthy. He's been nicked up. He's missed games. I think if he's healthy, we might see all three of these guys have a role. But I would say almost certainly Austin Eckler is in store for a dip in production and therefore a dip in dynasty value.
Yeah, I Joshua Kelly, he's going to be the hammer. There's no doubt about that. And to your point with Justin Jackson and Austin Eckler, they're basically the same guy, you know, and Eckler he does do everything better. And, you know, losing that role of Melvin Gordon, you know, I actually see an uptick with Eckler as far as the receiving aspect of it, especially with whether it's Tyrod Taylor or whether at what point what they're going to experiment with Herbert, that quarterback situation is going to be a little bit scary. So we could see a lot of Austin Eckler in the receiving game too, just like if Rivers was even going to be there. But yeah, Josh Kelly, he's just going to be that guy that, you know, especially when you're 10 yards and in, that was Melvin Gordon's world. You know, Eckler had some moments in there where he would power some through or jump over the line or whatnot. But yeah, I definitely agree. He's definitely the guy that's going to be the number two back, I think, even from day one. And he's a running back that even in rookie only drafts that I'm seeing going way late in the second round, early third round. You know, if you're doing like 10 or 12 team, obviously if you're getting deeper, he'll move down a little or move up a little bit more. But definitely a guy worth targeting in that range.
Yeah, I can't believe he's Kelly's been so cheap in rookie drafts.
I can't either, and I've been loving it.
Yeah, I mean he's getting talk out there. There's just so many running backs kind of in that vein of guys who could be backup, could see a role. Maybe the starter's going to be gone in a year. We're speculating. There's almost 10 of these guys, so you're just kind of picking your favorite. But Kelly and Lynn Bowden is another. We were talking about him before we start recording, Steve. Both of those guys are way too cheap, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Antonio Gibson. You know, I mean, even like I have – we can touch on this in a minute if you want to, but the whole – like what's going on with A.J. Dillon and where he's at, I kind of have a theory on that one too. But we can kind of wing that one a little bit. This next backfield is an interesting one too, sticking in LA with the Rams. You know, I think Malcolm Brown was a second round tender last year, I believe is what they gave him.
I think so. I know they were aggressive in getting him back. Detroit, yeah. As you know, Detroit tried to steal him away and
yeah, right.
it did not happen.
No. And then, I mean, they spent, I believe it was a third round pick on Daryl Henderson last year, and then they take Cam Akers this year. You know, we all know the story with Todd Gurley. He's gone. He's over in Atlanta now. There wasn't a very good showing from Henderson last year. Malcolm Brown has been serviceable, but a guy like Cam Akers falls in their lap, and he is somebody that still produced fairly well in a terrible offense, behind a terrible offensive line. And I believe it was a whole new system over there in Florida State just this last year as well. So, I mean, I love Cam Akers, and I'm seeing him going, you know, that 4-5 spot in these top five running backs. I mean, where's he at in your ADP, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's probably a third rounder in startup drafts right now, and certainly being viewed as the starter there with the Rams. And I think it's his job to lose. Yep. The Rams traded up to take Henderson, as you mentioned, last year. And basically everything since then has told us they did not get what they expected. You know, he barely could get on the field. Even after dumping Gurley, they weren't ready to hand Henderson the job or even necessarily a larger role. I think this is Akers' backfield. I think Brown's the backup, and Henderson still has to fight to really even earn a role.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this gives McVay that guy that he can go back into that stretch run, play action. You know, they'll probably run. I mean, they're not just going to run 11 personnel all the time, you know, and you still have Gerald Everett. You still have Higbee that they can, you know, those guys came on later. I mean, he had to evolve that offense last year, and those guys really came on even more. And then, you know, great, they traded away Brandon Cooks, but they obviously believe in Josh Reynolds. And then they drafted Van Jefferson too, and you still have Kupp, and you still have Woods. So there's a lot of weapons there. And I think Cam Akers just gives that healthy element in that backfield that's going to allow that offense, I think, to get back on track this year. And then this last group right here, this is an interesting one. Just because, you know, the amount of injuries that are involved, and then the lead guy with his ball security issues last year, but that's Seattle. You know, I'm not going to dive too much into it because I want to see where your head's at with this one, with all of the fuzziness that's going on.
Yeah, well, with injuries to both Chris Carson and Rashad Penny late last season, I think everybody assumed that Seattle would add a running back. They end up adding, they end up drafting DJ Dallas on day three of the NFL draft, who got a little bit of buzz there for a couple weeks until Seattle also signed Carlos Hyde. So that was a little cold water on the DJ Dallas hype, probably deservedly so. I don't know. Carlos Hyde just won't go away here. He just keeps hanging around to muddy up backfields.
He's trying to be Frank Gore.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a ways to go for that. but I mean, this still has to be Chris Carson's backfield. It sounds like he's going to be healthy in time for the regular season as we know it now. Rashard Penny has some questions as to whether he's going to be back on the field. So I think that's the reason to bring in Carlos Hyde. But if I'm picking any of these guys, and they're all pretty cheap in startup drafts and trades, all undervalued, I think. I mean, Chris Carson has given us five RB1 games in each of the past 2 years, so 2018 and 2019, five times as the top 12 running back. Pretty solid number there. Again, you worry a little bit, like we talked about with Marlon Mack, you worry a little bit about the ceiling, but just that steady guy, that steady producer you can count on.
Yeah, I think even with – because he had seven fumbles, I believe, all last year, and he was definitely top 12, but I want to say he was even top 10 in half PPR or even full PPR. So, you're losing those points on fumbles, and he definitely produced. And, yeah, I mean, DJ Dallas, if I remember correctly, he was the backup running back to Travis Homer in college, and he's just coming to Seattle, and he's just going to repeat that role.
Yeah.
You have – to your point with Penny, he's going to probably start the year on the pup. Hyde's even coming off of a torn labrum, I believe is what it was. I think pretty sure he's healed up, or they're expecting him to be ready for week one, like they're saying with Carson. So Carson's the guy for me too. I don't really see him going anywhere, at least this year. I mean, he's going to be a free agent after this year as well. So he's definitely going to be looking to put up a good year. And he's a Pete Carroll guy. He runs the ball hard, so on and so forth. So he fits that bill, but I'm very curious to see that if he gets through this season healthy and he's another like top 10 to 12 guy, if they're going to, extend an offer to him to stick around a little bit longer, but I guess we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. There's just so many of those free agent running backs or set to be free agents after the 2020 season. It's going to be a wild next, 12 to 15 months. I think we'll see a ton of shakeup at the position across the league.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of trades get pulled off too. I really want to see if Leonard Fournette finishes the year in Jacksonville.
Yep. That's a good one to watch. We all heard the same rumors. They wanted to shop him and they couldn't find any takers. So that is not good news when you're a high priced running back.
Exactly. Now, before I jump into it, what are your thoughts on AJ Dillon? And I mean, I don't know if you have a rookie ADP available to you right now, but I've been seeing him go roughly the same range. Like I keep seeing him, Gibson, Kelly, go in that like end of the second round, beginning of third round. And then I'm seeing Bowden go even like up to the end of the third round. So these are very valuable guys that you're going to get a little bit later, but where do you stand on AJ Dillon?
Yeah, Dillon's an interesting case because he was kind of like that running back nobody really wanted to like. We didn't want a piece of him pre-combine. He comes out and runs a lot faster than most people expected at the combine, and then the hype started to build. Like he was actually going in the first round of some of our rookie mocks pre-draft that we ran over at DLF. Of course, the surprise pick by the Packers in the second round. And I say surprise not only because of who drafted him, but also where he was drafted. Most people did not consider him a second round pick. But even with all that, his value actually has dropped a little bit. So I do have ADPs 2.05 right now in ADP. And this comes from my fantasy league draft. So we pull their ADP for rookie only drafts. We've got over 500 of them So a huge sample size. Dylan is going anywhere from 13 to 24. So he's locked in as a second rounder. But for the most part, that mid to late round range. I don't think it's not good news for Aaron Jones, and it's certainly not good news for Jamal Williams, who was actually, I don't want to say he was usable, but he was at least worth the roster spot.
Right.
and he's probably not anymore, given the addition of AJ Dillon. So again, it muddies that water. I'm confused that the Packers don't want to commit to him, because especially when Williams was hurt last year, we saw Aaron Jones look like one of the best running backs in the league.
Yeah. I was just surprised as most. And then, yep, like anything else, you sit back and you kind of take it in. And I'm looking at that situation to where you have both Jones and Williams, they're unrestricted free agents after the 2020 season, and they're both getting on, you know, mid 20 going to 30. Like, you know, they're going to be 26, 27 years old. So now, going back to your point a few minutes ago, the free agent running backs that are going to be available next year, you know, is it very possible that Aaron Jones is going to get paid to go play somewhere else? There's a possibility, more than what Green Bay is going to be willing to pay.
Yeah.
So you have AJ Dillon, you could still re-sign a Jamal Williams for a lot cheaper than you're going to get Aaron Jones. So I think AJ Dillon is more of like, you know, draft him this year. Don't expect anything from him until next year, unless Aaron Jones gets injured. I see him supplanting Jamal Williams for the RB2 this year. But, you know, to your point, to where you're like, yeah, he's worth the roster spot, because if Aaron Jones is healthy and he's on the field, he's going to produce. I don't see him doing what he did last year. I sold him everywhere that I could before we even got into the draft. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I think you're on the same page there too. Cause I definitely, both of their picks, it was just kind of, in my mind, it's this new regime picking their players to start implementing over the next couple of years here.
Yeah, teams are just scared of giving that second contract to any running back, even one who has produced like Aaron Jones has.
Yep, exactly, and especially for where they drafted him a few years back too. Yeah. So, all right, that's all we're going to go through on these running backs here. Ryan, I'm going to give you – I know we talked about Scott Fish a little bit earlier and everything that's going on. I know you guys have been super busy with that, and we're all very appreciative and very humbled to even be a part of it, because it is a great tournament. It's for a great cause. But I mean, anything else that you have going on right now, everybody sees how active you are and a lot of the stuff that you do for the fantasy and dynasty community. But anything you're working on, man, floor is yours.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Just continuing to churn out some content at DLF, working on a couple of different pieces right now. One, a 2021 Dynasty rookie mock draft, looking at who might be part of that rookie fever this time next year. And then also just an update on Superflex rookie tiers this year. So working on both of those. We also rolled out a new tool at DLF today called MyDLF. You can link up your My Fantasy League teams, use our trade analyzer, use some of our other tools to really help manage your team, your dynasty team. And we think it's a pretty cool feature. We're excited about it.
Well, that's very cool. That sounds awesome, man. And I mean, everybody in the fantasy community should know where to find you on Twitter, but just in case good people are not, what's your handle? Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RyanMC23.
Excellent. And make sure you're following myself on Twitter as well at SBAC21. Follow Chris at prof_ChrisSW. Make sure you're going on to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is that you guys enjoy your podcast listening, and follow the Sleeper Wire Show, and follow the Sleeper Wire Show as well on Twitter, so you guys are staying up to date with everything that we have coming out. So, Ryan, again, man, really appreciate you coming on. Always a blast talking football with you. And, best of luck to you this year in Scott Fish, man.
Yeah, I'm going to need it. Thanks for having me on, guys. It was a great time, as always.
Absolutely. So until the next time you guys hear from us, have a good one.